This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the race is on, the U.S. presidential race, that is. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders ended his presidential bid, paving the way for former Vice President Joe Biden to be the presumptive Democratic nominee. But the ongoing coronavirus pandemic in the United States and the need for social distancing to slow its spread is creating enormous challenges for campaigning and voting as we approach the pivotal presidential election in November. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you from my makeshift home studio in Washington, D.C. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders seems to have come to the realization that beating U.S. President Donald Trump in November was more important than advancing his own would-be movement. However, the Vermont Independent said he plans to stay on primary ballots and accumulate delegates in a bid to influence the Democratic Party platform, even though he is not a registered Democrat. Sanders acknowledged that Joe Biden would be the Democratic Party nominee and said that post-convention, quote, "Standing united, we will go forward to defeat Donald Trump, the most dangerous president in modern American history," unquote. Well, speaking of the convention, given concerns that large crowds will spread the coronavirus, Democrats have postponed their quadrennial convocation for the week of August 17. It was originally slated to take place during the week of July 13. It will remain in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But some are even saying now that Sanders has dropped out that a live in-person convention may no longer be necessary. In a controversial move this past week, the state of Wisconsin held its primary elections on April 7. The state's Democratic governor attempted to delay the ballot to protect voters and poll workers from being exposed to the coronavirus, but he was blocked by the Republican-controlled legislature. Attempts to extend the deadline for mail-in ballots were also rejected. Voter turnout was comparatively low, and results are not expected until next week. Since March 17, most remaining states have postponed their presidential and congressional primaries in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak. The viral outbreak has intensified a long-running partisan fight over ballot access. President Trump and a growing number of Republican leaders are challenging efforts to make voting easier as the coronavirus pandemic disrupts elections. They fear that expanding mail-in ballots will open the door for voter fraud. Democrats, on the other hand, argue that the current public health crisis has created an urgent need for mass expansion of mail balloting and the relaxation of voter ID requirements. As Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers stated, quote, "No one should have to choose between their health and their right to vote," unquote. Well, joining me to talk about the impact the coronavirus pandemic is having on the U.S. political landscape are our veteran political analysts, John Fortier, the director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
And of course, Jim Kessler. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Welcome to you.
Great to see you, or hear you, I should say.
That's right. Well, gentlemen, let me begin, of course, with John Fortier. John, I'd like to get your reaction, obviously, to Bernie Sanders dropping out, what that means for the Democrats to have this kind of unity this early on, and what does it mean for Republicans?
Well, you know, we've had obviously some very unexpected circumstances. The coronavirus has really changed all sorts of things in our political life. Where we were before, we had this massive change in our lives and shutting down much of our daily life and economy was that Joe Biden really had gotten on a track to be the very likely winner of the nomination. He was not there formally. We were going to have to go through a number of states for him to get to the majority. It was possible that Bernie Sanders could have come back, but it would have taken a real significant change in the dynamic of the race. Effectively, it is almost impossible to hold an election today. We did have one in Wisconsin, and there are controversies about this, and I think it reveals all sorts of things about our election system, one of them being that no one person makes the decision as to whether to cancel or move an election, and it's a very rare event, almost never happens. But luckily, I think for Democrats, they had more or less gotten to near the decision that they were going to pick Joe Biden, and I think Bernie Sanders dropping out was a reflection that he was going to have a hard time winning, and that most states, with the exception of Wisconsin, were really pushing their primaries back to later in the year. We could talk more about the convention when it happens, but I do think political time is a bit frozen now, and Joe Biden hasn't been as prominently out there. We're not talking about the Democratic candidates the way we were. The president is on display in a way, although that can cut both ways, and we will go back to a little more normalcy at some point. But we're certainly not going to go back to as if the coronavirus didn't happen. So I think we're very fortunate to have had the timing that it did, because Democrats would have had a very hard time resolving their election had we done this a couple weeks earlier.
Well, Jim Kessler, I think you would probably agree that Democrats are breathing a sigh of relief that Bernie Sanders, who was reluctant, notwithstanding the insurmountable delegate count in favor of Joe Biden, but rather reluctant until now. But he did bow out, although he's going to retain his delegates and he'll stay on the ballot. What's your take on the impact on the Democratic race in particular?
Well, this has been an extraordinary Democratic primary from start to finish. At this time last year, there were 25 people either in the race or they were eventually going to be 25 people in the race. The thought was, heading up towards the primary, the Democrats would not be able to pick a nominee by the time of the convention. We might have, you know, what was called a brokered convention, because no one would have the delegate lead. And here we are in early April and the race is over. And through the first three states of this race, Joe Biden got less than 30% of the votes. But then the final 28 states that have voted, states and territories, Biden just really crushed Bernie Sanders. Sanders got out of this race because he had no chance to win. He was behind 303 delegates by a count of 1217 to 914 going into Wisconsin. He won Wisconsin by a large margin in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. They voted on Tuesday. We're not going to see the results till next week, but I'm sure their own polling showed that he was going to lose Wisconsin. And I think he wanted to drop out of the race before suffering another public humiliating defeat there. So Democrats are at least unified in terms of the number of candidates in the race. It's Joe Biden. You know, the question is, how strong will Bernie Sanders be supporting Joe Biden to try and beat Donald Trump? He was a reluctant warrior against Donald Trump in 2016, did not really wholeheartedly back Hillary Clinton. A lot of preconditions, a lot of grumpiness, a lot of saying that the system was rigged against him, hoping that he reacts differently this time, because he lost fair and square. He really got blown out this time.
Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk about Bernie Sanders. If you think he will get strongly behind Joe Biden, and more importantly, bring his dedicated followers along with him to actively support Biden, because we know President Trump is threatening to woo Bernie Sanders supporters, because there are some points of convergence, like the aversion to free trade and a protectionist instinct that actually both have. How do you see that playing out? His relationship with Joe Biden is presumably much better than it was with Hillary Clinton.
Well, I'm not sure we're going to see that much of a difference from 2016. That being said, I also think that most Democratic voters, Bernie Sanders voters, are likely to come home to the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders might be marginally a little bit more favorable to Joe Biden than he was to Hillary Clinton, but I'm not sure that he's going to be the most enthusiastic supporter of him. It's interesting to watch the more progressive part of the party. If Joe Biden does end up losing to Donald Trump, I think there will be a lot of people in the more progressive part that say, you know, we really do need a super progressive here to head the ticket. So I think that sort of pressure will build. Of course, if Joe Biden wins, it'll make it harder for them. So I expect that Bernie Sanders will certainly do the right things. He won't cause too many troubles. He will ask for some things, some platform changes, some personnel. I think for the most part, the Democratic Party has moved in some of his direction, and Joe Biden is in a position of strength and doesn't have to move dramatically in that direction, but he'll probably make some gestures.
What do you think about that, Jim Kessler? Most Democrats will eventually come home to the Democratic nominee, and that looks like Joe Biden, even Bernie Sanders supporters.
I think most of them will, but I think there's a fair amount that won't, too. And I think it's wise for Joe Biden and for Democrats to say, look, some of these Bernie Sanders people will never come along towards us. Let's not even try, because this race is likely to be won or lost in the suburbs of the swing states. So Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, those are the states that had gone Democratic six consecutive presidential cycles and then went to Donald Trump. Florida, which is going to be up for grabs, Arizona and North Carolina, which could be up for grabs. What happened in 2018 when Democrats really came back and won control of the House of Representatives was the revolution occurred in the suburbs, and it was really moderate voters, mostly women, coming out and voting out Republicans and electing moderate Democrats. So you want these Bernie Sanders supporters to be with you, but what it might take to get every last one of them might scare too many of the suburban voters that you need to win the election. So I think that Biden's pretty smart. He's a center-left politician historically. His platform now is more progressive than any platform that a Democratic nominee has ever run on. So I think he's got to be careful about going too far further to the left and realize that your targets really are suburban voters and African Americans, who many of them live in the suburbs as well.
That's a very interesting point. Well, I don't think we'll see Medicare for All on the platform, but there probably will be some concessions to Bernie Sanders and his supporters. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way, from whom you just heard. We're discussing the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the U.S. political landscape as we approach the 2020 election. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is always available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to all of our fans around the world. We want to thank you for listening, writing in. We hope you're staying healthy and safe as we all confront and try to minimize the coronavirus pandemic. And as always, if you want to hear your name on the air, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion. First to you, John Fortier. Let's talk more about Biden, Bernie, and the third B, Barack. Barack Obama, that is. What about the role of Barack Obama and even his wife, Michelle? Do you think Barack Obama now will sort of come off, most Democrats, let me put it that way, are anxious for him to get in and bolster the candidacy of Joe Biden?
I do. I mean, I think there's almost no harm for the former president and his wife to be full-out supporters of Joe Biden. I mean, I think some would have said, well, there was a test for Joe Biden during the primaries, and the fact that Barack Obama didn't come out meant that he was at least waiting and seeing what was going to happen. I think Barack Obama is a popular figure. There are some dangers to a nominee having too much contact. Certainly when Al Gore ran as Bill Clinton's vice president, Bill Clinton was a more controversial figure at the time than Barack Obama. But the idea that you want to step out on your own and be your own person, I think, is important. And so Joe Biden, yes, he has a long career, but he wants to be his own person as well as liked by the Barack Obama coalition. So a little bit of stepping out of his own shadow, making sure he's the lead, is important. So I don't think that a surrogate is going to bring all those voters by themselves. It really is more about the person at the top of the ticket. But Joe Biden obviously has some strength with the African-American community. Barack Obama will help that. Still don't think it's the same thing as having Barack Obama himself at the head of the ticket. But that sort of help would be very helpful in many of these swing states that Jim mentioned, especially in the Midwest.
So Jim Kessler, with your finger on the pulse of the Democrats, how much would Barack Obama help the ticket? Should he get more involved?
He's already helped Joe Biden quite a bit, because Joe Biden is the nominee because of African-American voters who came out in droves in the Democratic primary to support Biden over everybody else. And then in the end, especially against Bernie. And why did they vote for Joe Biden? Well, sure, Joe Biden has history with the African-American community that's mostly very positive and mostly very close. But he was also Barack Obama's vice president. So I think a lot of that work helped him win the nomination. Obama going forward will help, as John Fortier said, turn out African-American votes. Already, turnout was expected to be pretty good among African-Americans, and they always vote for Democrats in huge margins. We need every last drop if we're going to beat Donald Trump. And I think definitely in places like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, in Milwaukee, in Detroit, in these swing states, in southern Miami, you know, having Barack Obama be actively involved in saying, like, do it for your country, do it for me, do it for Joe, I think that'll help. I don't think it means a lot elsewhere in the general election, even though Obama is very, very popular. The people who like Barack Obama like Joe Biden.
Any guess as to who will be the VP pick for Biden?
Sure. I think it'll be Kamala Harris. I'm not positive, but I think there's a couple of boxes that you want to check. He already said it's going to be a woman. I think it'll most likely be a woman of color. I think it'll most likely be someone from a different geographic area than where Biden hails from. And I think it's going to be someone who's significantly younger than Joe Biden. There's a number of people who fit that category. Stacey Abrams, certainly. Amy Klobuchar is not a woman of color, but is from the Midwest and is also, you know, a different generation. Kamala Harris really checks all those boxes.
How do you see it, John Fortier? Do you have any guesses?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the obvious choice is Kamala Harris. Really, studies have shown that people don't vote for that vice president. They vote for the person at the top of the ticket. And it might be a marginal benefit. It might help you a little bit in a state or with a constituency. But boy, pretty much it's about the president. So I don't want to go too far in saying this vice presidential nominee will bring all these strengths to the ticket. It's really going to be about Joe Biden. And look, Kamala Harris, for a variety of reasons, has some experience from the largest state, African-American woman, ran for president. I do think she'd be the most obvious candidate to pick for Joe Biden.
In the few minutes we have left, John Fortier, let's talk about the controversies surrounding remote voting, mail-in voting, particularly in the age of the coronavirus pandemic, because we may be in social distancing for quite some time. And even as we go out more and the economy opens up, it's not going to happen from one day to the next. And this also brings in the Wisconsin primary election, because the Wisconsin primary was controversial because it happened in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. People had to go out of their house to vote, and they had to choose, in a sense, between their health and their right to vote. What was at stake in Wisconsin? And in particular, why is remote voting, mail-in voting, so controversial, particularly from the point of view of Republicans?
Well, let me start by full disclosure. I wrote a book now 13, 14 years ago on absentee and early voting. And if you and Jim bought that book, you'd probably double my sales. And if all the listeners did, boy, it would go through the roof, because it wasn't exactly the most exciting topic at the time. Look, just some background. We do a lot of voting across America before Election Day. That's a trend. It didn't used to be that way. But in the last presidential election in 2016, over 40% of people voted either by mail or at some of these early in-person voting sites that various states have. So it's a trend. It's growing. It's also very different from state to state. Some states do 100% voting by mail, essentially, especially some of the Western states. Other states are much more traditional and do voting on Election Day. I think the big controversy about that, leaving aside the politics, is I think there are people pushing, for understandable reasons, for doing more voting by mail. I don't think it's possible to really flick the switch in a quick way to make everybody vote by mail. People talk about that as if it's possible. I don't think it is. I do think that states in their own ways will move to doing more of this. But there are both legal and some people's views on whether we should do that or not that are going to keep us from going that way altogether. And, you know, I wasn't the most positive about voting by mail in my book, and I do think there's some issues with it. So we shouldn't put all of our eggs in one basket, but we're going to have to spend a lot of money, states, thinking about how to hold elections in a more flexible way, in probably different ways in each state. Quickly on Wisconsin, I know there's a lot of controversy, but I do think it really does boil down to it's a very confusing thing for us to be able to cancel or delay an election. We almost never do it. We saw in Ohio earlier that the governor's move made the election change. But there's no one person, even in the state, often they can say, change the elections. It's defined by law. The governor sometimes has powers to protect the people in the state. And both sides, if they control some of the levers in that state, are going to be pushing for the election to look the way they do. I think, fortunately, we had a race that was basically wrapped up with Bernie Sanders probably the loser. And many states were able to postpone their elections without much consequence. It's not really an option in the fall. It's very, very hard and difficult to imagine postponing a presidential election in November. There's very little time to resolve it. We'd only do it if we had to. And so all of these issues will come in as to whether to do remote voting or not. But the fact that we have a very decentralized system with nobody really absolutely in charge of this could lead to some of these political differences like we saw in Wisconsin. And I do think we need to be very, very careful about A, preparing for the election, and B, not assuming that we can move this election unless the worst hits us.
Certainly. I don't think anybody's proposing that. But very quickly, before I turn to Jim for the last word, why is it that Republicans are the most averse to this mail-in voting, to absentee ballot voting, even though Mr. Trump himself cast an absentee ballot in the most recent election? They claim voter fraud, but most analysts say there isn't evidence really of voter fraud. There was evidence last year in North Carolina, but it was fraud that was actually perpetrated by one of the Republican candidates, I believe.
Look, I don't think there is widespread voter fraud, but you know, interestingly, before this controversy came up, the people who would say that would also note that the in-person voting was more secure. There are some issues, the fact that we allow ballots to leave the polling place. And this goes back to some of our earlier history where we really tried to give voters protections, protections of privacy, not just fraud. Your ballot, if you vote it behind the screen, nobody can see how you vote. There are some issues with the transmission of ballots, people being eligible to vote. We also are likely to see some issues related to the counting of the votes after the fact. It's already the case in some of the states that do a lot of vote by mail that we take a very long time to count these ballots. I think that can be exacerbated by moving too quickly to systems that are not already in place. Look, I'm somebody who's generally skeptical of voting by mail on large scale. I do think, given our situation, we're going to need to do more of it in the fall. My position, though, isn't that we shouldn't do that, but we're going to have to also be flexible in other ways, have some more early voting, do some other things. But we can't expect that states who are not doing this already to put the systems in place to quickly flip the switch and sort of make an all-mail ballot election. I think that's impractical, likely to lead to some election disasters. And there are some general philosophical views about a better type of voting being that has the protections of the polling place that many hold.
Jim, you get the last word. I don't think anybody's really advocating an all-mail ballot, but given the coronavirus pandemic, the public health concerns, I think many who advocate for more mail ballot are saying there must be a way to both balance the integrity of the election and public health. Some Democrats are concerned that Republicans are opposed to mail-in ballots because they are trying to suppress vote, because they are saying, and there may be some evidence, that if you have a greater number of voters, they are likely to benefit the Democrats and perhaps disadvantage Republicans. So there is that argument. So you get the last word on all of this with respect to mail-in ballots.
I think we're seeing elections change in real time. You're going to see more mail-in voting and you're going to see more early voting. I agree with John. You can't flip a switch. It's going to take a while. What we saw in Wisconsin was very interesting because there were huge lines in Milwaukee as people tried to vote, but also more than 1 million people voted by mail, too. So the vast majority in that election did some form of remote voting. The issue on voter suppression, so is it true that higher turnout helps Democrats? It depends on where the turnout is. And the reason why Democrats are pushing for this is in urban areas, that's where you get the long lines at the voting booth. And if you've got a health pandemic situation, that's where the long lines and the crowding is really dangerous. And that's the Democratic base. That's where a lot of African-American voters are. The whites there tend to vote Democratic too. When you get out to the suburbs, you don't see the huge lines at the polling places. So it would be great if by November, if people were voting in person, you could have enough voting machines that are actually working and enough people at the polls that you're not lining up for 45 minutes or 2 hours to vote. But I don't think you're going to be able to flip a switch on this. But we are moving in that direction, and we will continue to move in that direction until you see something where there is some fraud perpetrated or, you know, a lot of complaints about early voting or mail-in voting. But that is the trend line.
All right, gentlemen, the conversation will be continued, and I'm inviting now John Fortier to join us on my Press Conference USA program to talk about your terrific book about this very topic in the near future. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks for a terrific conversation via Microsoft Teams. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo and Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.